Thank you so much for having MSF, for having me and MSF and my colleague Andres in this panel. I will try not to add to the already overwhelming list that you have listened to, even though I know, representing MSF today, that there are some expectations, of course, in this room regarding the recent bombing of our hospital in Kunduz. And I will certainly address the issue, but I would like to put that very tragic incident in perspective and try and reflect on some of the findings that came with the research that I'm contributing to conduct within MSF under the name of Medical Care Under Fire. I've kept the name of this panel, which is very adequately called Practicing Healthcare in Situations of Violence, and what I want to focus on is practice, actually, because as Amy, our first, Maria Susanna put it out at the beginning, there are differences in perspective between a humanitarian organization and a human rights organization, stemming from the fact that waiting for the norms and international law to move forward, we still have to continue to work in the field, and that means accepting some of the realities and compose with the constraints that goes with them. I will recall some of the structural constraints we have to work with. Is that the no? Other space. That's as easy as it can be. Thank you. Those are drawings from a century ago, from World War I, 1915 exactly. And those cartoons, those drawings say two things. One, that bombing of hospitals and attacks on medical personnel did exist only a few decades after the advent of the newborn Geneva Convention and the laws of war promoted by the movement created by Henri Dunant. This refers to one incident in particular, which was the assassination of a nurse, Edith Cavell, a British national, by a German officer. The other is a typical French caricature that represents a dialogue between a German officer and a soldier, the soldier saying, "My general, the cathedral has been demolished," and the officer replying, "Very good, now bomb the hospital." It talks about facts that did happen already. As soon as the Geneva Conventions were put forward, they were violated in the next war, because even those states, the very same states that promoted new norms to try and bring limitations to the war that they saw as becoming more and more violent, once they put in a situation of war, they don't want to deal with those limits anymore. So they are both representing what you could call violation on international norms, but they were also tools, propaganda tools within the war. Those were used by the British government and the French government to demonstrate what was called at the time German atrocities, and those atrocities served to legitimate the fact that Geneva Conventions would not be applied to the Germans because they were not respectful of the norms. And so the logic of what we have called the total war was in place. You point out the barbarity, if you will, of the enemy, and then that legitimizes the fact that you don't apply to them the norms of civilization that are contained in the Geneva Convention. So this is an old story. And to some extent, this logic is replicated in a more recent cartoon that was published following the bombing of the Kunduz hospital. This is black humor, if you will, but what I wanted to show with that cartoon is the fact that what is at stake here is U.S. credibility. This is a war of image. What has the U.S. lost in bombing this hospital? Well, what MSF has lost, obviously, are colleagues, patients, human beings. But we can't help that our movement or our reaction to that event be read according to those very old grid of analysis, that is, by asking for by raising the accountability issue of the American and the Afghan government, we are exposed to the criticism that we are actually reinforcing the propaganda of the Taliban. But if we were not doing it, if we were not saying anything, we would be accused of being too lenient on a Western government. We can't escape those logics. And we have to recognize from the very beginning the political consequences of setting up those international norms, that taking a neutral stance or being a humanitarian actor in that environment, your action and whatever you say about it can always be manipulated by the parties to the conflict. You have to, I mean, this would be a dream world to think that our word will be listened for what it is. It is taken in an environment which is very highly politicized, of course, and reinterpreted according to the logic of war. There is another aspect that I want to look at. I've talked about war over the past century. I would like following on that cartoon, some black humor, of course, following the Kunduz bombing has had to deal with the fact that Nobel Peace Prize winner President Obama did call another Nobel Peace Prize winner, MSF, to apologize for the bombing of its hospital. And that's why I would like to call another Nobel Prize winner, that one Literature Prize winner, which is Jean-Marie Georges Le Clézio, a French writer, who wrote the story of his father and of his childhood spent in Africa. His father was a French citizen from Brittany and was a physician and decided to go to the colonies, to the British colonies, what is now Nigeria. And Jean-Marie Georges Le Clézio describes the bitterness of the experience of his father, moving from a moving doctor that was riding horses and going from village to village to actually providing medical care in a regional hospital. And I will read what is written here. When he enters the rooms, my father can see the fear in their eyes. The doctor isn't the man bringing the blessing of Western medicine and who willingly shares his knowledge with the village elders. He is a stranger whose reputation has spread throughout the country, who cut arms and legs when gangrene has begun, and whose only remedy is contained in an instrument both frightening and derisory, a brass syringe holding a 3-inch long needle. And so my father realizes, after all those years when he felt close to the Africans, like a relative, a friend, that the doctor is just another actor of colonial power, no different from the policeman, the judge, or the soldier. How could it be otherwise? The practice of medicine is a power of a people too, and medical surveillance is also political surveillance. The point I'm making by quoting Jean-Marie Georges Le Clézio is to recall that humanitarian action, especially medical humanitarian action, has to take into consideration the relation between the medical act and power, and also to wonder what type of medicine it is providing. What I want to allude to here quickly, because I guess my time will be soon up as well, is the fact that we have to remember that violence is associated with medicine, whether we want it or not. We don't need to go to Syria or Afghanistan to know, and all the I am actually not a physician myself, but there must be some physicians in this room, I am sure. And working in the US, you know that there are tensions in the waiting room, there are tensions in hospitals, in the ER. There are many places where the relations between the patient and the doctor is under stress. The patient between the doctor and the family members of the patient can lead to violent acts. Think of the inner violence of that is contained in that relation and transfer it to a place where there are no longer norms because of a war situation, where there is no judge, where you are setting up a project that involves surgical care and that may benefit to actually combatants, wounded combatants. Then, of course, you are dealing with people who are carrying guns. You are dealing with people that are afraid of the possible discrimination that they are usually used to, and that they are not sure that you will give precedence or would like that you give precedence to their family members or to their brother-in-arms in the hospital. How do you deal on a daily basis with this type of situation, with this structural violence and stress? And what I want to highlight here is the practice of delivering healthcare in this type of situation. That can include actually having depository or storage rooms for people in arms to leave their weapons at the entrance of hospital. That means negotiations. That means setting up hospitals with a conception of the space of hospital that allows that some that people in arms will be kept away from the emergency room. And we have actually accounts from Central African Republic, for instance, where the guardian at the entrance of the hospital were not able to stop people with weapons, but those actually respected doctors within the hospital. So you have to imagine several spaces within the hospital that will allow for instance, wounded combatants to be separated from civilians and try and diffuse the possible violence that is contained in this type of situation. If you don't anticipate the inner violence of those situations, then you are accountable also to the incidents that may happen. The other aspect, of course, and I want to make, although I'm beyond time, but I'll try and be quick, when I talk about the type of medicine that we deliver, it's important to associate the type of situations we have described, that of Ebola, for instance. Think of the violence, the inner violence that was attached to the fact of putting people in containment center, most of them knowing that they would die there, to try and prevent the spread of the disease. The act that the doctors are asked to perform at that time is a very violent act, and not surprisingly, elicits some violence in response from the society. How do you explain what you have to do? How do you ensure that whatever care you provide with a consideration for public health will be done humanly and that you will take into account your responsibility as a physician to the individual patients you have in front of you? All those are responsibilities that MSF and all physicians, of course, need to take, of course, into account. I would like to conclude, because this is high time I do it. Another aspect of MSF's work, and I think a very important one on our part, is that we are, and we try to promote the fact of having expatriates working alongside national doctors wherever we can in the countries where we work, because being it's not enough to claim neutrality, it is important to be a third part to the country, to third part to the conflict. You can't expect physicians or medical personnel, whoever they are, to be immune from the dividing logics, from the logics of war that is spreading throughout their society. And I would like to give the MSF's experience of in Syria, for instance, that working along with Syrian doctors were the ones who introduced MSF within the conflict, otherwise we couldn't have, without this cooperation, we would have been able to enter that territory. And along our cooperation, even though MSF was for a very short time able to work there with expatriates because the danger moved between to the bombardment of the government, soon we added the pressure of extremist opposition groups such as Daesh, as you know. And in that collaboration with national doctors, most of the doctors that actually had taken sides, whether they wanted or not, in a conflict, because they were in the area controlled by the opposition, they discovered, or they realized working along with MSF, that setting up norms to defend the neutrality of their space, including against the pressure they received from armed groups was necessary for them to try and perform their task, even though they may have had in their heart political feelings and a sense of political opposition to the government from the beginning. But at the same time, they realized at some point, and one doctor that worked with MSF actually made that experience of trying to remove from the hospital where he was working the flag that was put by a radical armed group and who was accused and put under pressure and almost judged for that. He had to eventually leave the country because this is a space where neutrality is not accepted by the parts, by the belligerents in place. And we have to recognize this is the limitations of humanitarian action, and this will be my last word, sorry about this. We have to recognize that there are times where the total war runs against the very principle of medical humanitarian action, because medical humanitarian action rests on the idea that life has a value, and to some belligerents, life has lost that very basic value. In that time, we have to remove and hope for better time and better opportunities to try and again put forward our action. Thank you very much. Thank you.